the Off Track Racing Show. My name is Tristan Merrick, and we're here in Whistler, BC. And of course, this show wouldn't be possible without our amazing sponsor, the one that's doing it for us each and every round that we've been putting these on, BikeMag.com. Make sure you guys check that out, your one-stop shop for everything mountain bike related. Some good content on there lately, lots of good videos. So check that out. I'm Tristan Merrick, your host, as always. And joining me today, we've got our man, Seb Kemp, and we are on the eve of
the greatest race in the world.
Very much so, the greatest race in the world. We've got our chainless A-line in town tonight, and for all of you,
fancy dress,
no dress.
The race is unimportant. The fancy dress is the winner.
It depends what you wear at the end of the night. So we've got that going on for all of you guys at home. We've talked about it many times here throughout the season. We're fortunate we have probably one of the best local racers. We're not saying it's the best, but probably one of the most fun things. So if you're ever in Whistler on a Wednesday night, come check it out. It's $2 down at the base of Whistler Mountain, and you get to race some of the best trails out there. And you get a beer at the end of the day, and it's all for
$2. $2. I mean, we're not going to say it's the best race, but it's certainly the greatest race in the world.
Yeah, in terms of registration and everything like that, I mean, you don't even have to, it doesn't cost you a fortune to fly somewhere and uplifts and this and that, so.
It's very well organized, the marshals are handsome or sexy.
Very good looking.
The horses are well groomed.
And of course, a little side note, we also had one of the other amazing races in town this past week in Battle of the Bonds. Yes, this isn't an Enduro World Series event or World Cup downhill, but lots going on in Whistler, keeping both of us quite busy here since our last podcast. So I guess since our last one, of course, it was right after the Whistler Enduro Series there. And just because that race finished didn't mean that Seb and myself, our job for the week ended. We still had 7 days of body torture and fun times to take place during Crankworks. And what a week it was in terms of just the events going on and the racing that unfolded.
Yeah, but thank God it's over. And we've moved on and we're back to normality. Town has relaxed somewhat. The alcohol consumption has dropped a little bit, and it started raining, which is nice. So we've got nice tacky trails.
It is. It's that time of year, though. It's always sad when Crankworks ends, because then you know the inevitable, the sun getting lower in the sky each and every day. And when you get off work, you got to race to get out and get your riding time in, because daylight is fading, unfortunately. For somebody like myself who works Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. Who's on lunch break right now? for all you listeners at home, this is the length we're going to right now. We are doing this on my lunch break, so.
Yeah, it's quite a length.
Trying to make it happen. But so, of course, last weekend, it kind of crept up on me. I don't know about you, Seb, but we had our the six round of the Enduro World Series, 6 of 7 rounds this year, creep up at Val d'Isère. And what a race it has. Well, actually, we have Sven Martin joining us a little bit later on, as he's our kind of guy on the ground there. But a few key things I think we touch on right away. Both series wrapped up early, one round early.
Yeah, men and women's. Jerome Clemence and Tracy Mosley are the greatest mountain bikers in the world.
Very, very talented bicycle handlers. After witnessing both of them at Whistler, very well deserving, I think, in terms of everything. I know probably not the way Tracy would have wanted to win due to a penalty, just due to a French rule. Lots going on in terms of for the riders. I do feel for them, because it's not that there's a different rule book at every place, but there's different rules that they have to abide by each cycling federation. So
what was it? What was the rule she wrote? Did she ride through the lunch break? Was that what it was? Like, I think it's between, was it 1 till 4? The whole of France shuts down, and she kept on riding or something, and that was seen as I don't know what the rule was.
Cheating, or I don't know. We'll have to get the update from Sven later on. I'm sure he was there at the finish line, and of course CG getting penalized too. So I think we'll leave all those things. We'll dive into that later on. But yeah, the series wrapped up. One thing I really want to touch on is Jared Graves. We've talked about him lots. I'm not swinging from his nuts when I say this, but yes, he did not win the series this year, but he will be a force to be reckoned with next year for his kind of his first go at it this year. He went up against guys that have been doing this, I mean, you know, 9, 10 years. And I think the bar will be raised substantially for next year.
He's pretty good, isn't he? He's pretty good. Do you know what I really enjoyed is reading his blogs, his diary, his journal.
They're a great way to, I think, to just know exactly what the rider is going through, the racer is going through, just to get to the race and race.
Yeah, there's a lot more into it than you sometimes realize. I was reading about, what was I reading about this week? His bike not turning up, so he went out riding on someone else's bike and the brakes were back the front, and then he was trying to get over jet lag. And he had to squeeze in a ride before dinner so he could like stretch out his legs because he'd gone for a nice walk. I mean, actually, that sounds like a beautiful little holiday.
Yeah, sounds like a good time over there.
Yeah, Craig, what? Anyway.
But very. It's cool to see him recapping each race with that journal. In terms of, I know I've been reading them each and every time, and even just reading the Whistler one where I got to compete, it was cool to see exactly what these top guys are doing different than everybody else, They're just like you and I. They have issues, right? You know, we get a mechanical while we're out for a ride. I mean, their bike's not turning up. They're having crashes. They're trying to learn the course, and especially with these European events, they're chairlift based. But you can't just go walk every stage, as it says in his journal. One of those stages would take about 3 hours to walk, and then your legs are blown out. So you had to kind of pick and choose your battles wisely. So
that's difficult. Hey, you can't take the chairlift up the mountain, but walking down is tiring.
Yeah, very much so. And then of course, I'd say the shocker result weekend was, or not the shocker, but Martin Mays placing third in Scratch as a junior.
What is he like? 17, 16?
I think he's still 16.
I mean, so
he's clipped in now, though. I know there's people still think he's on flat pedals. He raced Punta Ala on flats, but he's clipped in now. But
for that age, he's got a lot more issues than the other races going on, if you know what I mean. There's hormones rushing through his body. He's probably thinking about
girls. He's probably Snapchatting with more than one individual.
Yeah, I mean, he has to work out what Snapchat is. Hang on,
Snapchat? Yeah, exactly. So we'll touch more on all the Val d'Isère stuff when we get Sven online there. And of course, the biggest race of the year for the downhill is coming this weekend. And just maybe a little preview there. We've got the World Championships coming from Peter Maritzburg.
Wow. It's coming around quick, isn't it?
It seemed like yesterday we were starting the season, and now it's we're already on the downward slope to a couple more World Cup downhill races. There's still Leogang and then Norway, but of course Worlds is before that, and it's going to be quite the race. I mean, average speed is ridiculous, I think, is the best way to put it. It's not your regular downhill race where you're slowing down in corners. It's keeping your momentum from start to finish, because the average speed, I think, some parts you're hitting 70 kilometers an hour as you're hitting those jumps. So
it is the fastest course on the circuit, isn't it? So a lot of people kind of moaned when it was announced that this will be a world champs track, but I think people have come to the idea that it's still a challenge, and that's what the racing should be.
Yeah, it'll provide some, I think, excellent racing. I mean, the last time everybody was moaning about what the world champs course was in Australia, and I think that provided one of the best world champs to witness. And the technology has come so much since then in terms of bike setup, where guys were taking XC bikes back then, and Fabian converted an XC bike into this purpose-built downhill bike, which you look at the picture of that back in the day, the Monraker, and you're like, that is scary. Now we're seeing, Graves is going to be racing the exact same bike that he got second place with last weekend.
On the Enduro. So he's taking his Enduro bike and he's going downhilling.
Yeah, he's going to go show these downhillers what's up, apparently.
Or what's down, hopefully.
What's down, what's up. So, yeah, very, very exciting race.
And there's some other weird bikes floating around, isn't there? But, I mean, is this whole race going to come down to the bike, do you think?
I personally don't. I mean, I still think it's the rider at the end of the day. There's clear favorites, right? We've got Mick Hanna, we've got G. Atherton, and we've got Greg Menard. Not to count anybody else, there's still anybody can pull off a result. Even Aaron Gwynn's up there and everything like that.
He's got an eagle on his top tube this year.
And $100 bills, apparently.
Really?
So I don't know if he's been in the strip club or what he's been up to.
I think he's been, him and his manager have sorted out some very tasty deals over the winter.
Yeah. So yeah, lots of guys, those, all four of those guys, by the way, are all riding regular downhill bikes, just slightly changed in terms of, air suspension on the rear and some lighter weight parts, but they're still opting for full blown downhill rigs. So I think that's going to be interesting to see if, What will win at the end of the day? Will a standard 26-inch wheel bike pull it? Or will...
Or will a human on a two-wheeled machine win?
Yeah, yeah. I will bet 100% on that.
There we are, then.
Easy bet.
Easy bet. Anyone out there, get yourself down to the betting shop.
Easy bet. So, of course, next week we'll be wrapping up World Champs. We'll have we'll be back on the phone. Of course, Sven, we always have a hard time tracking him down for these shows, but he loves to, if we don't get him on, he loves to tell us that we didn't get him on. So we'll have him wrapping up the show with us next week. And of course, we'll hopefully have maybe a special guest or two coming in from South Africa. So still working on that. Pardon?
Diane Wood? Are we going to get them on the show?
Yeah.
You've been promising this all year, Tristan.
Oh, we'll try. But just even getting Sven on tonight, I know he's, I think he's got a tinfoil hat on and he's in the middle of the yard out in front of the house. So
he is pretty special.
But let's actually go over to him right now. He is online and joining us all the way from South Africa. Sven Martin. Sven, thanks for taking the time.
I am lying on a tennis court, staring at the stars under African skies. So don't ask me why, but for various reasons, this is where I'm at, and it's 11 at night, and I'm halfway through my work.
Does it take you back to being a teenager, probably doing the same thing?
I was never on a tennis court. I was at the beach or at a skate park or something.
Fair enough. Well, let's dive into stuff right now. You were, Seb and I were just chatting there. It kind of, feels weird after we had the Enduro World Series at Crankworx. There wasn't really much on the radar in terms of what we report on here for the off-track show, but there was still lots on the go, and we've almost burnt out. Didn't even get the fire going, and almost the last round caught us off guard. What did you see that happened at Val d'Isère at the kind of Enduro of Nations?
Well, first of all, Jerome wrapped up. He's pretty much Enduro World Champion for 2013. And to wrap it up with one race left to go, says a lot. He was always one of the favorites, if not the favorite, going in. He wrapped it up with some difficulties and flat tires in earlier races. But that said, another thing that is also no surprise is that, Jared Graves is a serious threat. The only thing Graves lacks on Jerome, because he certainly doesn't lack any fitness skills or any downhill or riding skills, is a few strategy and race planning and basically just experience. Jerome's been an enduro rider and now racer for 8-10 years probably, and Jared only for one. So the way Jared lost this race is purely he lost it versus Jerome winning it. Not to take anything away from Jerome, Jared just rode too quick in conditions with next to zero visibility, and as a result he went off track and crashed, and that's the one step. The morning of, let me figure this out. No, the last day of Saturday. Basically, that lost him the race.
So, do you think next season, when Jared he's got that experience and maybe matures into the enduro format even more, that we're really going to have a crazy battle next year, surely, between Jerome and Gerard even more?
I think without a doubt, and I think Nico is going to come back even fired up even more. And just like we've seen everyone in downhill having to raise their game to whoever's dominating that previous season, the gaps get closed by everyone, not just the number one and two rider.
Well, take out two bad stages out of the six rounds that we've been at, and he would be the guy that's in the lead there, right? After Winter Park, his little derailleur mishap, and overriding the conditions, it's scary to see what that guy can put in time-wise. And he caught Jerome in the last stage there and pedaled across the finish line pretty much holding his hand.
Yeah, I mean, Jerome is also by no means did he get smoked by Jared as much as it looks like on paper. Jerome knows exactly the time deficit before he sets off. He also knows that he didn't need to basically win this round. But what he knew he needed to do is not lose it, because he obviously the series title was on his mind, you know. So he would happily lose this race if he could 100% ensure that his bike would finish with zero mechanicals, and then he wouldn't crash. So basically, yeah, I think Jared made more time than Jerome suspected, but also Jerome definitely played it safe. He wasn't going for his best stage. He was going for a stage that he knew with 100% certainty he was going to finish without a crash or a mechanical. So, and that's just part of it, you know, stage racing.
He's very smart.
Yeah, he's smart, but he's also was just a little bit upset at the very first stage that it took him so while to find his groove, and he wasn't super happy with his times on stage one and two, and you know, but then he did have a really good stage on the tough, tricky conditions of stage three, which, you know, maybe Jared wasn't so comfortable with the mud, you know. Jared hasn't really raced in the mud in enduro anyway, so it was a good match. And then, you know, but I wouldn't count out Fabian and Nico and stuff for next year. I think Nico's pretty fired up, even though he's injured. He's, you know, he knows what it takes.
What about Justin Leov there? Because that was a bit of heartbreak. He was sitting in second place prior to that flat tire that he couldn't reinflate. What about a guy like him for next year?
Yeah, can you still hear me? Because you just...
Yeah, we can still hear you.
Yeah, I'd say Justin's not so much with his being up there, but the fact that he was second and so close to second. It looked like it took him a while from, you know, he wasn't at the earlier rounds and he kind of steadily worked his way up. And I wouldn't say he did well because he was on a 29er. The course definitely suited a bigger bike with some awkward rocks to roll in stage two. But Justin just, you know, I definitely knew he was capable, but I didn't think he'd be right up there, you know, a threat for the win.
He must have an interesting conundrum now. When I spoke to him at Whistler, he said that he wasn't really expecting the Enduro World Series to be as good as he realized it was. And so at the moment, he's on a building apprenticeship back in New Zealand trying to start a real life. But I think he's seen through the races he's been that how good it is and that he's really got a potential in this format. So now it must be hard for him thinking, what's he going to do? Stay at home and become a brickie? Or is he going to get back out on tour again next year?
Well, it's no longer hard for him. He's already made a decision. He's 100% in next year. And he's put his building career on hold for a year. And at this stage, he's trying to see if Trek or Trek World Racing, because originally never on his schedule because he was going to get back and get laying bricks. But he's going to probably, I would expect him to be back at Finale, and I think he's in it all year next year, Enduro. So, yeah, and that's another one that obviously has the skills and the pedigree and the background, and he's always was one of the fitter downhillers, and now he's seen what it takes. So there's all these people that might be new to enduro, but they've learned a lot. I mean, this series has just had everything, every kind of condition, every kind of track. It's super. It's had a little bit of everything, and
I remember Chris Ball, he said his main intention for the Enduro World Series was to try and find the world's best mountain biker, and it seems that
that's come about. Knowing Jerome yeah. personally, his ride, he is an incredible, incredible mountain biker in all areas and all facets of riding. But like you say, all the different courses have chested and challenged riders in any condition on any sort of trail, eh?
Yeah, I've been at all of the, well, I wasn't at the race in Whistler, I wasn't at the Colorado one, but I've been at all those tracks as well. So, yeah, to have beaten pretty much every world champion in every discipline. And every other top enduro rider on every kind of condition and track, gravity or pedal based or whatever. Yeah, I would say Jerome is the best regular bike rider on the planet right now. I guess I don't know how to segue into something, but we'll just have to put a pause right there, make it hard for you.
The standout performances from the weekend. The ones that really stand out to me are Nico Lau finally getting a good result in fourth. Obviously, Martin Mays being a junior thrasher, getting third place in Scratch.
Scratch.
And then also Tracy Mosley wrapping it up. But is there any other standouts that stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, look down that list and look who's after Nico Lau. I mean, Jamie Nicol, Man of Hell wasn't a fluke. Whistler on the podium wasn't a fluke, you know, besides other riders having mishaps or being penalized. Jamie Nicol, next race in, is I think he, you know, was he fourth? Yeah, he was fourth overall. That's a big one, and unlucky for Tracy, she was the fastest woman on the day, and unfortunately for her, you know, it is a rule, but it's unfortunate to be, you know, penalized 30 seconds for not having a back number, and she had beaten Anne fair and squarely on the bicycle, and it kind of sucks to have that penalty, to have the win taken away from her the way it did.
You were probably there. I mean, Tracy Mosley is one of the fairest competitors out there and probably one of the best advocates of the spirit of enduro. Anyone that's listening, we've talked about this at great lengths, what it is. But how did Tracy take the news that she was getting penalized 30 seconds and effectively losing that race?
She accepted it. I mean, she knew what she did was wrong. She had said a couple of times that morning, she said, oh, I need to get my back number. I need to get a replacement one. I need to get a replacement number because she had lost hers in a crash the day before. But with the day, there was so much going on and a bit of, I'd say, chaos and confusion and a bit of disorder with times being pushed back and start times change and practice and waiting for course information, that there was a lot going on that normally wouldn't be happening. So in that confusion, she basically forgot to get her number, and the only sour point, which soured it a bit, Anne, who won, as well as about five or six other girls, or seven, you know, actually maybe even more, all got lost the day before, left the course and rejoined at another point, not gaining time, but technically all those girls that freely admitted to being lost should have all been penalized 30 seconds, just like people have been penalized in the past for cutting the course or you know, not entering the course where they left it. So really, if Anne had received that penalty, which I guess she should have on Saturday along with some other girls, then, and Tracy had received her 30-second penalty of the back number, then Tracy would be the winner again. You know, so even though Anne admitted to the officials, as did a bunch of other girls, that
it's interesting here, because I know on our end we reread about all the girls missing.
It was the same place. They weren't penalized because it was deemed.
Well, we still have you there, Sven?
Yeah, you disappeared for a second, but I can hear you.
What about Cedric? Cedric got a little penalty. What did he get slapped on his wrist for? Or is it slapped on the bottom?
From what I heard from Cedric, he had broken his chain and he finished the stage without it. And then he was getting from the base area to get his chain at where from his hotel or whatever where he was staying. Basically, you could work on your bikes between every stage. At this one, there was no kind of set time when you could work on your bikes like some of the events. So, in that, hurrying off to get a chain or riding kind of in the area, he had no helmet.
So something just as simple as not having a helmet as he took off to go work on his bike, and that was enough for a penalty.
He wasn't thinking because he wasn't really liaising. He was just trying to get his chain fixed, and he just sort of forget, you know. So that's what I hear from Cedric. So I'm not sure exactly what went on. And
how did he take that?
He had. It was just a number of things. He had a few crashes, and he had snapping his chain was one thing, and then going off the course in the fog was another thing. So it was almost like he had so many things happening to him. He was just laughing it off. He wasn't upset about it. He was just like,
Ahoy, do we have you there? We thought you were lion bait in the middle of the tennis court.
No, there's actually a cat here, but monkeys on the fence, but there's no lions. Yeah. There are monkeys though. So I don't know where I cut off, but
just how Cedric was laughing off what happened there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was maybe more frustrated by the fact that there's more officials to catch at the bottom of the track trying to catch people for those kind of infringements when we could have used officials and marshals up top preparing tape and making sure that, you know, under the adverse conditions at the course was that riders could find the way around. Maybe that was frustrating, you know. That was the only other thing of the weekend, really. It wasn't as smooth an event as the past have all been. And looking from the outside in, as a rider or competitor or member of the media, there was a lot of... it seemed like there was a lot of confusion and disorganization, and really what it was simply put down to is more, we're out in the Alps, really bad weather, really, basically it's two things. I mean, it's two acts of God, which you plan for as an event organizer, and you have contingency plans. But the two major things that kind of set it at ball and chain of events. I don't know. It's dropping. The signal's dropping.
It's all good. I think anyways, like, I know you still got lots of work to do, and we're going to make this one a shorter one anyway. So I think just that content is perfect for us at this point. We'll,
okay. Well, then stay away from the negative side of, just you can sum it. I'll just give a quick 5-15 summary on let's think about how to word this here. The only hiccup, okay, you can edit in now. The only hiccup to the weekend's racing was really just a course hold from a injury that required medevac, which basically set the event back an hour and a half. And in doing so, we ended up running into some really bad weather that, with lightning and thunder, the lifts were closed for another hour. That caused a loss of one stage. It caused a lot of waiting around, and there wasn't a lot of communication to the riders and what was going to be had. And, you know, from an organizer standpoint, it was really they couldn't make a decision because one of the stages required, a helicopter to be able to evacuate. And with the cloud sitting on the mountain, they, you know, didn't want to cancel the stage. So they were kind of trying to keep postponing the decision. And that kind of kept riders in the dark. So that was really only down to the weekend. But other than that, you know, another pretty memorable race for sure. And some good trails some good steep and some mud. First time we've had some proper mud in the Enduro, so that was good to see.
Yeah, definitely. They've been kind of dry or tacky courses the entire year. Nice to see it almost World Cup format where it pisses rain on the athletes and they have to deal with those conditions more than anything.
Yeah. And talking about World Cup, here at the World Champs, we've seen a lot of enduro tires, seen a lot of single ply tires, and a lot of Rock Razor Schwalbe tires and some single ply prototype Maxxis tires and quite a few 27.5 wheels on Blanky's LaPierre and Steve Smith's, I don't even know what they call that thing, but he's got a purpose built World Champs winner, he hopes.
Really? What does, tell us about this Wilson then, or whatever it's called.
I'm going to say it's 160 travel in the back, 27.5 wheels, and arrived fresh from Taiwan via Colorado Springs. Forks arrived Saturday in the USA, and they got on a plane Sunday to RS of A, and just got mounted onto Stevie Smith's new, basically, bike that he was hoping to race here in South Africa. So he's going to reduce the travel of that boxer to probably, I'm going to say, 175 mil, and 175, 180 mil travel, dual crown, 27.5 wheels, and yeah, I've seen Manar's bike weighing in, Phil Daniel bike, Airshock weighing in at 32 pounds, 32.1 or something, and you've probably got, yeah, so that's, so, you know, you got the Stevie Smith and Sam Blankensop going with something new and different, and then you got Greg and G and Mick that are going just stock standard Daniel bikes, just with a few lighter bits here and there and custom paint and sticker jobs here and there.
Yeah, it's very, it's kind of interesting to see it roll out where we're seeing, it's almost like when it was World Champs was in Australia there, right? We saw lots of very purpose-driven bikes where, you know, the last couple of years it's, you just get on your regular downhill bike, you know, fancy paint job, and but you're still running the same stock old parts that you would run at the round beforehand.
Yeah, the difference from 2009 in Canberra to here is, I mean, and partly because of enduro, look at the quality of both suspension and frame design that a modern 6-inch travel bike can do, you know. So, you know, Fabian risked it and made a, you know, single crown Daniel bike, but there was never really a 6-inch bike capable of handling, you know. Mitch Roplada is going to be on a 29-inch enduro. So, you know, these are bikes that would never have been thought of back then as being capable. And sure, they're only capable on some Daniel tracks, but I think a couple of these hybrids will be quite capable out here, but it's still going to take a lot to take down a G or a Greg or a Pete or a Hannah on this track, really.
So that's quite interesting. So there's a lot of guys with some quite interesting bikes, but we've talked about this before on a previous show, the big three threats you just mentioned there, Greg, G, and Mick Hannah. They're on relatively normal bikes. I know that Greg's been experimenting with all sorts of wheel sizes and configurations all year to try and get the world's winning bike, but he's gone back to a relatively stock V10, and the same with G, by the looks of it. He's on a relatively stock GT.
Yeah, I mean, when you're going 70 kilometers an hour and your bike, there's no slow corners on Peter Maritzburg. There's no getting the bike back up to speed from a tight, awkward section. You're going into the pedal section flying and you're exiting the pedal section flying, so that there's really, you know, having to pedal a heavy bike back up to speed is not a problem here. It's basically maintaining that high speed, and if you've got the engine that these guys do and the power, you don't necessarily need a lightweight hybrid, you know. I mean, if Greg's bike is 32.5 pounds and G's is like 34.5 or 35, then, you know, depending on what tires are putting it on, those bikes are plenty light to be pedaled by those guys. You know, if the flat section was slow and had stalled out turns, then I think everyone would be a short travel bike. But, you know, it's the fastest track in the world, by far, a lot faster than Monsignan and Fort William, which are traditionally thought to be big, fast tracks. So I think, yeah, a Daniel bike is still, and looking at how they've changed the top of this track, you know, I'm not saying Graves is going to struggle, but he knows he's going to lose time on the top. The top is a lot more downhilly than it's ever been before in terms of rocks and steepness.
Yeah, well, fair enough, Sven. I mean, that's, I think, some great insight there to for all of our listeners, of a little bit of a preview of what to expect come this weekend. I mean, it's always a special race from World. So what we'll do is we'll sign off with you right now. We know we'll get you back on right as we will wrap up the World Championships there next week for all of our listeners at home. But we'll let you get back inside and get some work done and not hang out in the middle of a tennis court in the middle of the night.
Yeah. The only thing worth noting, he's tested on his. Are you there?
Yep. Sam Hill's tested what?
No. Sam Blankensoff. he's tested on his 27.5 bike last week in San Remo. Or San Romolo, tested 2 seconds quick on the 27.5, and I think for him, it's not just his South Africa bike, this 27.5 downhill up here. I'm going to say that's his bike he's going to choose for the rest of his World Cup racing on La Pierre.
Interesting. That's kind of segues into, we were just reading a tweet that Steve Jones of Dirt Magazine put out, and he was saying back to the enduro style, like 21 from 21 stages of the World Enduro World Series has been won on 26-inch wheels.
Let's see what those two boys are riding next year. If that's just what they had or if that's what they want. But at the end of the day, whether it's not the bike that wins the race, it's really the rider. It's just the bike that keeps our paychecks flowing, because then we can have something to talk about, ride a bike and take photos.
Why can't we talk about the love of biking rather than nonsense wheel sizes?
We all love biking. That's why we're talking about it. So that's what counts.
Okay, Sven, get back to your monkey-loving jungle.
All right, man.
Cheers. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for coming up.
Yep. Bye.
Okay, and of course that was Sven joining us there from South Africa. Always,
was he really tired, or did he sound just like a broken robot?
I'm not sure. Sometimes I think that the internet connection is breaking up, but then I also think he just stops talking because he doesn't know what he's going to say next. But then he starts talking again. If you listen to it closely enough, after our few Skype conversations this year, I'm like, ah, the internet's cutting out. And then I'm like, no, he just stopped talking for a second.
Sven's seen a squirrel.
Yeah.
Or probably a, I don't know, a gazelle, since I was in South Africa.
Yeah, the silverback gorilla saw a gazelle. So he's some good insight there, of course, for this show here, and telling us what happened at Val d'Isère, wrapping up with all the kind of, not controversy, but the hard event that they had to put on there. I mean, weather definitely playing, wreaking havoc, and As we saw in Whistler here, we had a couple of thunder strikes, the chairlift shuts down, and the top guys didn't get to the chair when they probably wanted to here at Whistler. So always good just to see another event go off without God's
interaction. There's been lots of lightning and thunder at these races. Do you think enduro should stay away from lifts? And how long is it until someone gets struck by lightning or a chairlift gets turned into a rotisserie chicken machine? Full of enduroistas.
Yeah, that'll be it'll be interesting to see once the season's done here. I know, talking to Chris Ball when he was in town, just get through the season and then reevaluate everything. But of course, it's already been announced the other day that there will be a Enduro World Series round in the UK next year.
In Scotland, in Peebles.
I don't even know where that is.
Is it Peebles? I think it's in Peebles. Or is it? Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
That's your neck of the woods.
Tweed Love Festival.
The Tweed Love. So another round to next year. So does that mean a round's going to get dropped, or is the series getting bigger? That's all stuff we'll have to wait for to see what will unfold in the off season when they announce the schedule. So.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of people trying to woo Chris Ball and the Enduro World Series into their van or backyard, whichever one's
I have some creepy. Candy, young man. Come on over here. There's kitty cats in this van. Oh, that's uncalled for. That's weird. But, so I'm getting caught off guard here. I'm losing my train of thought. We're trying to blast through this for you guys. Unfortunately, we didn't have any riders lined up, or we weren't able to get the people we were wanting to. With these time zones, Sven was saying that everybody was in bed. The Athertons were tucked into bed at 7 p.m. after sleeping in their their altitude tent. So
yeah, they're ready for it.
They're very, very ready for it. It's so
not even day one of Peter Maritzburg. It should be in the pits unfolding, and already we've seen them getting to bed early.
Well, it's a big week, right? I mean, we're only at Wednesday here in Whistler, so lots of action for them to still come and pace themselves throughout the week. It seems like the kind of track you could easily start to override and it's physical in so many natures, but just the pedaling aspect of it, trying to keep those legs fresh and as they say, peaking for their race run.
Do you know what one of the most entertaining ways I've been keeping track of the shenanigans going on in South Africa is we've been following Casey Brown and Michaela Gaddo's Instagram feed in the last few days. They flew into South Africa late last week, this weekend, yeah. And since then it looks like they've been having a great
Some good video action.
There was an Instagram video.
There was an Instagram video. It was somewhat office appropriate when I viewed it. I felt a little weird, you know, watching that. I was like, oh, okay.
Weird's one word for that.
Yeah. But very entertaining, those two girls there. And hopefully big results there. Casey just coming off with a broken collarbone earlier at the Canadian Nationals. So hopefully she's back up to health. And as a Canadian, I'd love to see her huck her way into the top spot, or at least send those big jumps and show the rest of the ladies how it's done. I mean, she's got... that girl's got style for miles and is not afraid to send it, as she seems to prefer walking the track barefooted at every round of the World Cup she's been at lately.
She is feral. Like, feral. She's just an animal. She's probably right at home in the jungle there right now. I mean, what do you think? Prediction. What's your prediction for the women's? We've talked a lot about the men's and we've debated that endlessly. But, I mean, the women's, it seems a bit more rampant, doesn't it?
I think so. You know, hard to go against what Rachel Atherton's doing, but we're seeing Caroline Buchanan's going to be racing. Is her background going to, is she willing to put down the power to?
Or has she not got the experience on a downhill bike?
That's very
at,
true.
At speed, as we said, there's a very fast course, and you got to know how to handle that sucker at some speed. So, yeah, she's a... What about Tracy Hannah? She won there a couple of years ago. Is that correct? Am I making that up? Or she got a very good result there 2 years ago when we realized it's Peter Maritzburg. I need to breathe now.
You've got me stumped on that one. I'm drawing a blank here on a Wednesday afternoon. I'm more concerned about racing A-line tonight and getting dressed up.
Yes.
But, yeah, with the girls, I mean, yes, we've seen more than one winner, but it's hard to bet against Rachel Atherton at the end of the day. She's, you know, if she was hashtagging it, she's on beast mode right now, you know. She's
gone full beast mode.
Full beast mode. She's going, was it Ham? Hard as a blankety blank, if you're listening to rap songs.
Oh, really?
Hard as a mofo.
Oh, right, okay.
But, yeah, beast mode, hard to bet against her. I think she would be the girl at the end of the day that's probably going to pull that out.
What kind of mode would you need to go into to beat beast mode if you're a woman right now? You'd be sat at home in your hotel room, probably twerking and thinking, what mode do I need to engage to beat Rachel Atherton in beast mode?
Just don't go into Miley Cyrus mode.
Oh, my goodness. Anyone watch did you watch the VMAs?
I didn't watch it. I just saw the viral videos and I threw up in my mouth a little bit. And
yeah.
If she can do things with a foam finger on stage, I hope other things in the world are happening to people less fortunate.
Well, there's Syria right now, but Miley Cyrus is twerking is the big story, it turns out.
And then guys racing. We've talked about the kind of, there's the racehorses up front. Seb, who's your money on at the end of the day?
My money is
one rider.
Greg Minnaar.
Hard to bet against him, hometown.
That guy has been preparing for this for a very long time. I know that tonight, right now, I think there's a premiere of a movie called One Life that Gary Perkins has been working on with Greg Minnaar. And it's all about his life and his build up to this one race. He's on home turf. I don't think we've seen the sparkle from him in the World Cup because he is so focused on this one race. To finish the world champs in that rainbow seat on home country, that's something special.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess the thing we're going to see, though, right, he's not going to be the last man. Is he going to be the last man down the hill? Or Did the rules change this year where is it going off UCI ranking is the last man down the hill, or is it last year's winner ranking?
Sure, actually. I haven't seen the start list yet.
We're catching ourselves off guard here, but I'm intrigued to see if he's not last man down the hill because he's not doing that good in points wise, is it going to make it all that more special, or is it if he's, because he's, you know, he's reigning world champion after Leo Gang last year. I mean, I think that that country, the friggin' roof will get blown off if he comes down last man and wins. I'm not saying riots in a bad way, but I'm pretty sure every piece of infrastructure will be crushed as the crowd rushes Greg Minnaert at the finish line.
That would be, money's got to be on that guy. And I'd really like to see him do that.
Yeah, very, very special. Interesting to see how a movie is coming out all about this, yet it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, it's been aired on the primetime TV networks, I believe. You know, he's a big celebrity down there. So is that the pressure that he needs? I think he is the kind of guy that's going to relish it. So he's probably sat at home in a dark box thinking about that one run for a very long time.
Yeah,
mentally preparing for it.
Probably since the first time they got the World Cup race down there, right? I mean, they got a World Cup race knowing that that they wanted to have world champs. That was their goal with it all along. It wasn't like, hey, let's just hold a World Cup. It was, we need to hold a world champs, so let's hold the World Cup first. So, for a guy who's been on the circuit that long, it's going to be very interesting to see him rise to the occasion. I think, I don't want to bet against him. You know, at the same time, I'm gonna pick a bit of a danger man, not maybe a guy who's favorite with that top three or top four, but Stevie Smith, as Sven said, on a purpose built bike for South Africa. Doesn't sound like it's a production bike; just sounds like, hey, we've built you a bike, and to go down there. And the guy has confidence right now. It's not his, it's not his backyard. He's going somewhere else, but he's after seeing his performance at Crankworx and at Mount Santa World Cup. He's primed and ready to go.
What will happen to Canada, Canadians' mountain bike community, if Stevie Smith wins?
Well, he will be prime minister.
He will.
That's just straight up. It actually doesn't matter what he won't, mountain bike title aside. He's just prime minister of Canada.
That's a constitutional.
Yeah,
that's written in.
Stephen Harper will be kicked out effective immediately, and Steve Smith will be.
Hashtag presidential mode.
Yeah, presidential mode. Exactly. So
I wonder what his policy on certain things would be. Maybe we should get him online. If he wins, I mean, we're going
to
be fighting.
We've been trying. I'm not going to lie. We've been trying to work with him, but he's been too busy hashtagging lads as the current trend is with young male mountain bikers on the World Cup. So I'm not too sure.
What does that mean?
It means you hang out with people like Josh Bryslin and other things. And I heard some interesting stories from Crankworx, none that maybe we should be airing on here. Just actions speak louder than words. And if you've seen the actions,
wow.
Lads. Hashtag.
Lads. Well, Stevie.
Back to Stevie.
If you're listening, please just come on.
Stevie.
Come on the show, please. I mean, I don't want to sound desperate. Yeah. Please. We have a lovely, cold closet that is got a perfect space. You can sit on top of the filing cabinet and we can make you a cup of tea. I've even got a growler of beer that you can sip on. I mean, it's after the races. I'm sure that you're allowed some. Please come on the show. I know it will make Tristan extremely happy.
It makes me very happy. And another, actually, talk about Instagram quickly, Steve Smith. Check it out. Have you seen the Gabe Fox taking a nap upright video?
No.
There's again... If for all you listeners at home, follow the top athletes on Instagram. There's some priceless gems there, and footage of team manager Gabe Fox maybe having a nap upright, snoring away while working at the computer in South Africa. So
that is quite something.
So
it's a wonderful insight into their lives. This Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat.
And I think at the same time, the cool thing with mountain biking is it's professional. It's the top level of the sport. But whereas you follow a baseball athlete or an NFL or hockey or whatever you fancy, those guys are just on another level of professionalism, and they don't show their personal side. I think everything's very there's a motive for every picture that they're putting up, whereas in the mountain biking world you get to see exactly what these athletes are up to and what they're what what they're doing in the off season, what they're doing between races, what's fun, what isn't fun. So I think it gives you a very good insight of who they are as an individual.
It's true.
So and they also call that creeping too, by the way. You know? just don't get caught liking somebody's picture at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Has that happened?
No, not at all.
I think there's a security function on my phone that I put on to stop me from doing kind of stuff like that.
Exactly. Well, Seb, any parting thoughts here before we shut her down for the afternoon and we'll be coming back next week?
Don't know, really.
Well, that's... I think what we're going to see is a very interesting race this weekend. And, yeah, crazy. We're already on the downward slope towards the end of the season and everything else. So, again, guys, thanks very much for tuning in and taking the time to listen to the Off-Track show here presented by BikeMag.com. We appreciate all you guys' support and sticking with us throughout the year. Obviously, we've been trying different formats through each and every show here, trying to spice it up, see what works, what doesn't work, and what you guys like. So... oddly enough, I keep saying this every show. Hey, if you guys have any questions or feedback or you want to, ask any of our guests a question, hit us up off_track show@gmail.com. Hit us up there. Please email me. I haven't gotten a single email this year. It's a redundant email account.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like this is for you guys, all you listeners. This is a way you guys can ask our people, our show guests, what's up. Or ask myself and Seb a question. And then, of course, Twitter, hit us up there. And
let us know what's better than Beast Mode. Let us know what your idea of lads is. And let us know what your late night hotel room twerking would look like.
Take us at the Off-Track Show. But for all of us here at the Off-Track Racing Show, thank you very much for taking the time to listen to us here. And, of course, thanks to BikeMag.com. And myself and Seb, we're actually on our way out right now to go get ready for our own mountain bike race this evening.
Makeup on, pants off. It's the fancy dress A-line chainless Fat Wednesday World Championship.
My pants will stay on, thank you. But who knows, maybe they'll make new makeup on. Mm-hmm. We'll leave it there. Well, thanks very much, guys, for taking the time to tune in. And we'll catch you guys next week.